Again, good evening, and it's great to see everyone. To echo what Mike just said, Joseph, brother, we're going to miss you. I know you and I have just been talking a few weeks ago, getting to know each other. We're going to miss you. And he's not moving to Washington to become a politician. He's going to be moving to the city of Washington, D.C. But, bro, we're going to miss you. If we ever come down there to visit, we're going to look you up. And so that we can spend some time. I'm very excited to announce that, first of all, I want to say thank you to all of us as a church and as a ministry for all the monies we've given towards special contribution. The office sends me an update every week, and we're very close to our goal in Brooklyn, actually less than $1,500. So I'm very, very thankful that we're almost there. Thank you to everybody that has given. It's still open. For those of us who still want to give and who have not been able to do so yet, but I'm very, very grateful for your generosity. So let's get right into it. We're talking about the book of Exodus. Again, like I've been saying for a few weeks now, Exodus is central to understanding the message of the Old Testament. It's the second book in the Bible. It's the major history of God's people. And the story of Exodus is told over and over again throughout the entire Bible. It's a book that talks about the deliverance of God's people, and that's the major theme. The characters that are in there are Moses and Pharaoh, Aaron, Miriam, and the Israelites, obviously. And the two key verses, all this is all introduction, so that I can get to Exodus chapter 2 today. The key verses are in Exodus 3:14, when God introduces himself to Moses, and he says, I am who I am. That's my name. When the Israelites ask you who sent you, tell them, I am sent you. And then the other key verse is in Exodus chapter 6, where God takes, I will take you as my own people. In other words, I'm going to redeem you, and you're going to be mine. And so what happened in Exodus is truly major in for us understanding our quote-unquote heritage, even as Christians. The breakdown of the book is in three parts. The first 18 chapters talk about the redemption of God's people. Chapters 19 to 24 talk about the covenant. And chapters 25 to 40 talk about worship. Again, this is the breakdown of the first 18 chapters. Again, this is all review. I'm hoping that you're going to take pictures of these things. I know I am going very fast, but we try to have a complete midweek within an hour. Please forgive me for quote-unquote zooming through this stuff, but I'm hoping that you will go back on your own, and as part of your quiet time during the week, you can go back and spend more time reading these verses and looking at things, okay? And so that's the second part. We're going to get to that in a few weeks when it talks about covenant and then obviously worship. And so tonight, let's get into Exodus chapter 2. It says, now a man of the house of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that it was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her slave girl to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. This is one of the Hebrew babies, she said. Then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you? Yes, go, she answered. And the girl went and got the baby's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you. So the woman took the baby and nursed him. When the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, I drew him out of the water. Verse 11. One day, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Glancing this way and that and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. The next day, he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. He asked the one in the wrong, "Why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew?" The man said, "Who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian?" Then Moses was afraid and thought, "What I did must have become known." When Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well. Now a priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came to draw water and filled their troughs to water their father's flock. Some shepherds came along and drove them away. But Moses got up and came to their rescue and watered their flock. When the girls returned to Reuel, their father, he asked them, "Why have you returned so early today?" They answered, "An Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds. He even drew water for us and watered the flock." "And where is he?" he asked his daughters. "Why did you leave him? Invite him to have something to eat." Moses agreed to stay with the man who gave his daughter Zipporah to Moses in marriage. Zipporah gave birth to a son, and Moses named him Gershom, saying, "I have become an alien in a foreign land." During that long period, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out, and their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. Let's talk about the faith of Moses' parents. Amram and Jochebed were Moses' parents. We see that reference in Exodus chapter 6, verse 20. Obviously, they had two other kids, Miriam and Aaron. Again, that reference is Exodus 7, verse 7. And we read in the account here, remember that in chapter 1, Pharaoh had instructed the midwives to kill all the male kids. And they didn't obey. And Pharaoh now gave an order that every boy that is born must be thrown into the Nile, but let every girl live. So it was during this period that Moses was born. We talked about this briefly when I was talking about the book of Hebrews, in Hebrews 11. Where God commended the faith of Moses' parents. The first thing I want us to notice is that at the height of the persecution, at the height of the edict, is when God decided to bring Moses into the world. You know, he could have done it a lot sooner. But you see, when God says, "I'm going to do something," he's going to do it. And nothing that any human can do will stop it. And so we got to learn to put our trust in God. It tells us that his parents hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw that he was no ordinary child. And they were not afraid of the king's edict, it says. They put their trust in God. Brothers and sisters, God's timing is always perfect. God did not make a mistake by bringing Moses into the world during such an oppression. And the question is, are we going to continue to trust God when things get hard? The last, I guess, 14, 15 months of this pandemic has been very challenging for every single one of us and all over this world. The question is, though, are we going to continue to trust God despite everything that we're going through? You see, tough times put our faith to the test. Anyone can trust God during comfortable and good times. Our faith or lack of it is shown in how we face adversity and challenges. Moses' parents passed the test. They didn't say, why did you allow us to get pregnant after such an evil edict? The Bible is full of stories of people that God tested their faith. God tested Abraham's faith in Genesis 22. God tested Joseph's faith from Genesis 37 all the way to chapter 50. God tested the faith of the Israelites. We see that in Exodus all the way through Joshua. God tested David and Daniel and Elijah and Ezekiah. The list is endless. My faith will be tested. Your faith will be tested. We need to accept it. And we need to stop feeling sorry for ourselves. Because whatever it is you're going through, whatever it is I'm going through, it's not by accident. We never learn faith in God in comfortable surroundings. I haven't seen it in scripture. God will test us. God will allow us to go through stuff, just like he allowed Moses' parents to go through this. Believe it or not, as tough as it is right now for us in America, most of the world are facing bigger challenges than we face on a daily basis. Our faith will be tested. James 1 verse 2 says, consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Other parents during that time probably also hid their sons. But obviously in this story, God is focusing on Moses' story. He's focusing on Moses' parents. I'm sure other parents, other Israelite parents, were hiding their sons and didn't want their sons to be killed. It wasn't just Moses that, you know, survived from all of this. Yes, the story doesn't tell us, but God focuses on his deliverer in the story. And I'm encouraged because God used the baby's tears to control the heart of a powerful princess. And we're going to talk about that a little later. Okay? She actually names him Moses, which sounds like a Hebrew word to draw out of water. The name Moses came from Pharaoh's daughter. Moses was not named by his own parents. That's very interesting. Okay? In Hebrews 11:23, like we looked at a few months ago, it says, by faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born, because they saw he was no ordinary child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. She hid him for 3 months, which meant they took some measures so that he would not be discovered. And you know how it is. Babies cry, or maybe Moses never cried, but I'm sure he cried. You know, and they tried to keep him quiet so that, you know, people would not know that he had a male baby in the house. But God is focusing on the story of his deliverer. And that's why this account is in the Bible. Let's talk about children for a second. The Bible tells us that children are gifts from God. Some of us are parents that are listening to me tonight. God gave those kids to you for a reason. Brothers and sisters, every child that you have is special. In Psalm 127 verse 3, it says, sons are a heritage from the Lord, children a reward from him. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are sons born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. Children are born and conceived by males and females coming together in marriage. Okay? Now, some parents become parents by adoption. But think about it. The children we all have are not by accident. God has given them to us for a reason. Okay? Now, many of us are great parents. And you need to continue to be great parents. You need to continue to be great examples for your children. Our kids need to be able to see Jesus in us. So that when they grow up, when they get to the point where they can make their own decision, they're going to say, you know what? I want to get to know this God that my father or my mother loves so much. I want to get to know this God, but God has given us the responsibility of raising them. And it's a huge responsibility. Our enemy, the devil, is scheming daily to trip them up. And he's wanting the world to influence them. And that's why every single day we ought to be on our knees, begging God for the souls of our kids. I've told us this, hopefully, before, but I'm going to say it again. I pray for my daughters every day. Yes, they are thousands of miles away, but I pray for them every day. Why? Because God is there. I pray for God to watch over them. I'm praying for my future sons-in-law. I'm praying that none of my future descendants will be missing from heaven. That's what I'm praying. And so what are you praying for your children? Parenting is hard. You know, when they're young, you know, they're cute. And, you know, I'm sure Moses, like say, he was a fine child. I mean, all babies are fine. They're beautiful. You start making faces and, you know, as adults and, you know, trying to make them laugh and all that. I mean, it's wonderful. But they grow up. And one of the hardest things as a parent is to see your child that you love transform into a sinner. And all of a sudden, they start lying. All of a sudden, they start hiding stuff from you. All of a sudden, the day will happen where you'll say something and they'll talk back at you and you're going, what in the world was that? But you see, they've been given to us as a responsibility by God to train them and to raise them up in the ways of God. Okay? Like I'll say it again, it is hard to see your adorable little children become sinners right before your eyes. You got to keep loving them. You got to keep leading them. You got to keep disciplining them. You got to keep discipling them. You got to keep praying for them. Okay? Again, continue to be the example at home that God has called you to be, and God will take care of the rest. Amram and Jochebed were Moses' parents, and they did a tremendous job hiding him for 3 months, and when they could do it no longer, obviously, God allowed them and gave them the know-how to hide him. And the two things we're going to see in here is two things. Number one, the plan, and then you're going to see providence. What was the plan? They placed him in a basket. Excuse me. They put him in a papyrus basket, and they coated it with tar and pitch and put him among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. I want you to notice, they placed the basket in a strategic place along the Nile. They must have known that, you know what, Pharaoh's daughter has a, you know, her bathtub in that section of the Nile. Why would they put the kid there? They didn't just, I mean, the Nile is a very long river. As a matter of fact, the Nile is the longest river in Africa. It goes all the way from Egypt all the way down to Lake Malawi in the south. And so you can imagine the length of the Nile, you know, quote unquote, around the capital. I mean, it's miles. But they placed him in a strategic place. The timing of the plan was perfect. Around the time Pharaoh's daughter went bathing. Where did the wisdom come from? I believe it came from God. God gave them the wisdom to do this. Now, again, the fact that you and I are Christians doesn't mean we don't use our brains. As a matter of fact, a good old friend used to say to me, Richard, your brain is the most important muscle in your body. Use it. God gave us a brain for a reason, all right? And God wants us to use it. And so Moses' parents, they used their brain. They were not just sitting in the house, oh, Father, please save our son, spare our son. They got to work. They were sitting in their house praying for God to somehow rescue their baby. I mean, maybe right now you're looking for a job and you're praying for a job or a better job. There's something you're praying about. That's good. Prayer is essential. Prayer is important. Now, after you've prayed, you got to get out and start hitting the pavement. Now, these days, because of everything is on the internet, you got to put that resume together And you got to write cover letters. You got to start, you know, searching job sites like Indeed and other places looking for work. Because God is not going to come and give you the job in your apartment. Yes, you pray. But then you're going to have to step out and do the work. God answered their prayers, I believe, by giving them and carrying out this plan. Now let's talk about the providence. You may ask, what is providence? What is divine providence? Providence is basically God overruling and having an overruling hand in the affairs of this world and all that happens in it to us as individuals. That's providence. God has a hand in everything. You say, God has a hand in this pandemic? Yes, he does. Because nothing happens without his knowledge. He has providence over everything. Okay, that's what providence is. In other words, again, God has a hand in everything that happens in this world. So this pandemic, for instance, that you and I are going through, it didn't take God by accident. He knew it was coming. He knew. He knows what will happen because he's God. That's providence. The mistakes you and I will make, decisions that you and I will make in our lives, he already knows it. Now, he doesn't interfere on them. He's giving us free will. But he will sit back and watch. And he's watching. And the cool thing is sometimes when we mess up, he will even use the mess up and somehow turn it to his glory and use it for his purposes. And so from in that sense, there are really no accidents from his point of view. Something may be an accident to us, but from God's point of view, it's not an accident. Okay? Pharaoh's daughter comes along. The Bible tells us that she saw the basket and she asked a slave girl to go get it. She could have ignored it. That's providence. The Bible tells us in verse 6 that Moses is crying. Maybe he's hungry. Maybe his diaper is dirty. Who knows? Maybe he's crying for all kinds of reasons. But he's crying. Maybe he's cold. She recognizes that it's a Hebrew baby. And she knew the edict her father had given. She could have taken that baby right there and just drowned him. She didn't. Why? Providence. If anything, the Bible tells us that she felt sorry for him. This is one of the Hebrew babies. And then Miriam steps out. God uses the baby's tears to control the heart of a powerful princess. That's amazing to me. Miriam pops out of the reeds. And she goes, hey, shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you? And what's her response? Yes, go. Providence. She could have said, who are you? What are you doing here? And have her arrested. She didn't do that. And this is the part I love the most. Miriam goes off, tells her mother, we're not going to read this here. Mom, guess what? The plan is working. She asked me, you know, to come find somebody who's going to nurse the baby. And so Miriam brings her mother, Jochebed, to meet Pharaoh's daughter. And Pharaoh's daughter says, take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you. It doesn't get any better than this. That's amazing. Okay? Moses' mother gets paid to be an awesome stay-at-home mom by Pharaoh's daughter, by the daughter of the man who gave the edict that such boy should be killed. That's awesome. That's providence. And when he grew up, the Bible tells us, we don't know how old, so she took him to Pharaoh's daughter and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, I drew him out of the water. I love this. This is what providence is all about. You see, brothers and sisters, God will use our missteps sometimes to accomplish his purposes. Moses grew up as Pharaoh's son in the palace. We can only speculate about his upbringing. You know, all the stories that you read or you maybe have seen in movies, him causing mischief with Pharaoh's son, that's all Hollywood. We don't know if that happened, okay? Interesting, but you and I don't know. We can only speculate that he had a privileged upbringing because he grew up in the palace in Egypt. Now, later on, Moses commits murder. He actually kills someone. That's amazing to me. Remember, God knew he was going to do this when he brought him into this world, when he chose him as his deliverer. And again, I find this encouraging because you know what? Sometimes God will use our missteps and still accomplish his purposes. The next day, we're told in the story, Moses sees two Hebrew people fighting and he tries to separate them. And one goes, "Who made you judge and ruler over us? Are you trying to kill us like you killed the Egyptian yesterday?" Obviously, what got to Pharaoh, what Moses had done. And so he flees. He takes off to Midian. And we're told that when he got to Midian, you know, he sees a bunch of ladies being harassed by shepherds, and he steps in. And his act of chivalry leads him into the house of Raul, prince of Midian. So much so that he marries the man's daughter, Zipporah, in the process. And Moses now settles in Midian. And he will spend the next 40 years in exile. When Moses went into exile in Exodus chapter 2, after fleeing from Egypt, he was 40 years old. And he will spend the next 40 years in exile. I don't know about you, that's a long time. Some of you listening to me tonight, you're not even 40 yet. So the first 40 years of his life, he was in Egypt. Then he spent the next 40 in exile. And it was not until he was 80. And we're going to see that next chapter when God finally shows up and says, "I got a job for you. As a matter of fact, the reason why I created you in the first place, you know, now is the time. And I want you to go back to Egypt and to tell Pharaoh to let my people go." But you see, God will spend the next 40 years while in exile getting Moses ready for his assignment. It was an accident. It was not an accident. Again, he marries the daughter of Zipporah. I want to say something here because, you know, sometimes we struggle where here's a man who has committed murder and God is still willing to use him. Brothers and sisters, God uses flawed people like you and me to carry out his purposes. We're all sinners and flawed individuals, every last one of us, including myself. I know sometimes, you know, as disciples, we like to place, you know, church people and, you know, elders and evangelists and teachers on pedestals. You can't do that. We're sinners just like you. We're not perfect. We never were, and we never will. Okay? So please, don't put us on a pedestal. You know, sometimes I hear, "Oh, people are disappointed," or they hear that this leader did this or didn't do this, and, "Oh, I'm disappointed." We're sinners. I have never put another human being or another elder or evangelist on a pedestal because I know I'm a sinner just like them. We mess up. But the cool thing is, one sin does not totally blow it for us. What God, I believe, looks at is the totality of our lives. Satan is the one that wants you to dwell on that one misstep, that one sin that you committed. God, you've asked God for forgiveness. You've repented of it. It's time to move on. You can't keep dwelling on it. But Satan wants to continue to use such a thing to hold you in place. You got to let go. One sin does not mean you've totally blown it with God. We all know of David in 2 Samuel chapter 11. He committed adultery and then he committed murder. He repented and God still used him. Now, don't get me wrong. When you read the account of David's life, yes, he paid. There were consequences for his sins. Because obviously his kids were messed up. And so, yes, you and I would sin, but it shouldn't define you. Now, you're still going to pay a price for what you've done because there are always consequences to sin. And that should be a motivation for us not even to sin in the first place. There is no sin that you and I cannot overcome. We need to repent and we need to move on, just like Moses did. Moses commits murder and flees to Midian, and yet God still uses him. God still calls him. You see, God allows the suffering of his people to continue in the account, in the story. While Moses is off in exile, those 40 years, his people continue to suffer. God's children continue to suffer. God allowed this suffering to continue. Why? It wasn't time for God to act. It wasn't as if that God had forgotten about them or didn't care about them. Quite the opposite. The time for their deliverance hadn't arrived. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 to 9 says, there is a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven. Everything is about God's timing. Everything. And so you may be sitting there going, man, you know, why hasn't God done this for me? Why hasn't God brought this about in my life? It's not yet time. And God's timing is always perfect. I remember when I first came to this country back in 1980. Again, I went up to school in Connecticut, not too far from here. And I was an accounting major. And I knew I wanted to get an MBA. And, you know, after getting here, I realized, okay. And remember, I wasn't a Christian. Or I believed in God. I went to church and all that. But, you know, the more I looked around and I said, who are the people with the money? I realized, these lawyers are making a lot of money. So I decided, okay, I'm going to combine my, you know, accounting and business background, I'm going to combine it with law, you know, I'm going to make me a ton of money. And as God would have it, University of Bridgeport had an MBA and JD program. Because normally, you know, your MBA takes you a year and or 2 years, depending on if you're going full-time or not, back then. And the law school is 3 years. And so that would have been 5 years of school for the MBA and JD, which was what I wanted to do. But in that school, because they combined it, you could get both your MBA and your JD in 4 years. But I had to apply to both schools separately. And so I applied to the business school for my MBA. They accepted me. And I applied to their law school. They turned me down. I still remember the day when I got the letter in the mail. Okay, these days, obviously, everything is done via the internet. But I got the physical letter and they said, sorry, we're not accepting you. You've not been accepted into law school. And I felt so down and depressed. I had no idea what God was doing. Obviously, I finished my MBA. And then as I was finishing my MBA, I said, you know what? I'm tired of the cold weather. So I bolted. And all the schools that I applied for law school were all in the South. University of Florida, University of Houston, San Diego University. I was just getting out of cold weather, okay? And so, but University of Florida gave me a scholarship. And it was at the University of Florida that I became a Christian. And I share that to say, you know, God knew what he was doing. If I had accepted, if I had gotten into the University of Bridgeport Law School, I probably would have never become a Christian. Because again, remember, I was very, very worldly. But God took me down to Florida. God allowed them to deny me admission back in Bridgeport because he wanted me in Florida, because it was in Florida that I became a Christian. And like I say, the rest is history. I've been a Christian now 35 years. And so I'm saying that to say, when you're in exile, God is up to something. God is preparing you for something else. Okay? Exile is your training ground. Exile is my training ground. God knows what he's doing. And what you and I need to do when we're going through our exile is to continue to trust God. You know, there are times, believe it or not, you know, again, I've been in ministry now for decades where, and again, nobody convinced me to give it all up in terms of, I said, you know what, I want to do this on a full-time basis. And I know, yes, I'm not going to be a rich man, you know, going through this. Sarah did the same thing when she was baptized and said, you know what, I'm giving it all up. And, you know, if I'd never gone to the ministry, I would be a multi-millionaire right now. And I'm not saying that to boast, but it's okay. I came into this world with nothing. I'm going to live with nothing. But you see, believe it or not, there were times in, you know, when we're raising our girls, especially when they got to college and, you know, we're trying to pay tuition, we're trying to, you know, provide for them. When Sarah and I separately, we'll be on our knees just crying. Like, you know what have I done? Here I am, I can't even afford to see my kids through school. But you know, one of the verses that always kept me going is Psalm 37, verse 25. That says, I was young and now I am old, yet I have never seen the righteous forsaken or their children begging for bread. They are always generous and lend freely. Their children will be blessed. That passage helped me through so many downtimes when, you know, things were very tight financially. And I'm like, you know, how are we going to get through this? And God in his mercy always came through every single time. My children are not begging for bread. Now, praise God, they're both disciples. They're in the church in Dallas, and they're doing very well in their lives and in their careers. And they got jobs, very good jobs. But God was teaching me through all that process to trust him. And so again, brothers and sisters, I don't know what you're going through tonight. I don't know what your issue is. But let me tell you something. God does. And all I'm saying to you is hang in there. Continue to trust your God. He will come through at the proper time. He hasn't forgotten you. So I'm going to ask you again, what is God teaching you in the last 15, 18 months of this pandemic? Ask yourself that. What is God teaching you through all this stuff? I'm learning to be patient with my wife and not to be easily irritated. I mean, we've come from almost a 3,000 square foot home into a 1,000 square foot apartment. Yes, it's just the two of us, but you know, we're on top of each other. And I'm learning to not get upset over little things. Okay? I'm not perfect. But God is teaching me something through all this. And it's very, very important that we take some time to ask ourselves, at every stage of our lives, what is God teaching me through all this stuff? You know, prayerfully, you know, we're going to start collectively having Sunday services. But again, we don't know what is going to transpire in the next few months. This virus is going to determine what we do. But it hasn't taken God by surprise. But we got to ask ourselves, and we need to evaluate ourselves, how are we doing in our walk with God? And do some serious soul searching. Okay? 18 months compared to what Moses went through for 40 years is nothing, in my view. And our prayer needs to be, Father, transform me. Lord, mold me. Lord, get me ready for the future that you have for me. Last Sunday, Steve Connard talked about using our gifts in the church. A lot of us remember JFK's inaugural address. He says, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. And so I'm saying to us tonight, ask not what the New York City Church of Christ and the Brooklyn region is going to do for you. Ask what you can do for the Brooklyn ministry in the New York City Church of Christ. God has placed you in this place for such a time as this. We can't sit around in the church and like, okay, here I am, feed me. That's not the church I read about the Bible. If anything, what I see is, here I am, send me. The gifts God has given to you, he has given them to you. And one day you are going to stand before him and give an account. One day you will stand and give an account of those gifts. And so my question is, are you going to use your gifts that God has given to you to glorify his name in his church? All of us can serve in some capacity. All of us. Ask your Bible talk leader. Say, brother, sister, put me to work. What do you need me to do? Leadership is serving. You want to be great in God's kingdom? Become a servant. The name means nothing. The title means nothing. So I'm asking us to use our gifts. I'm pleading with us to use our gifts in God's church. I encourage you to go back and listen to that lesson. It's online. Were you convicted? Or was it, did it just, you know, wash over you? And you didn't even think about it. We need to use our gifts in the church. We need you. We need your help. You're no longer an infant. We need to step into the arena. We need you to serve and use your gifts in Brooklyn. You know, the grass is always green on the other side. I'm sure you heard that saying. You know why the grass is green on the other side? Because the grass on the other side is fake. The grass always looks green on the other side. It just does. The wait is a blessing in disguise. With every test, there is a lesson and a blessing. And so, brothers and sisters, I want us to learn from Moses' time in exile. 40 years in exile. And God just, you know, he talks about it in three chapters. Chapters 2, we're going to read about it in chapter 3. And that's it. And then Moses goes back 40 years in two chapters. And so whatever it is that's going on in your life right now, God has plans for you. And let's be getting ourselves ready. Because I don't know what the new normal is going to look like, okay? We're not going back to normal. That is gone. But we're going into a new normal. And we need to get ourselves ready because God placed us in this church for such a time as this. Next week, like was announced earlier, we're going to be splitting up men and women. And so 2 weeks from now, I will pick up in chapter 3 and we'll continue to take apart the book of Hebrews. I'm going to ask our brother that's leaving us and going to Washington, D.C. to say the closing prayer for us. So, Joseph, please, if you go ahead and unmute yourself and lead us in a closing prayer. And then after that, Jimmy is going to put us into our breakout rooms.